तानि ऋषिभि प्रभो नवैकादश पञ्चत्रीणि आत्थत्वम् इह सुश्रुमा। श्री उद्धव उवाच कति तत्त्वानि विश्वेशाः संख्यातान्य ऋषिभि प्रभो नवैकादश पञ्चत्रीणि आत्तत्वम् इह शुश्रुमा। श्री उद्धव उवाच कति तत्त्वानि विश्वेशाः संख्यातान्य ऋषिभि प्रभो नवैकादश पञ्चत्रीणि आत्तत्वम् इह शुश्रुमा। माताजी, वर्ड टू वर्ड मीनिंग। श्री उद्धव वाच, श्री उद्धव सेड, कति, हाउ मेनी तत्वानि, बेसिक एलिमेंट्स ऑफ क्रिएशन, विश्व ईशा, ओ लॉर्ड ऑफ द यूनिवर्स, संख्यातानि हैव बीन एन्यूमरेटेड ऋषिभि बाय ग्रेट अथॉरिटीज। प्रभो, ओ माय मास्टर, नव, नाइन, एकाकश प्लस इलेवन, पंच प्लस फाइव, त्रीणि प्लस थ्री, आत्थ have stated tvam you iha during your appearance in this world shushruma, so I have heard. There are two more verses here. Kechit shad vimshatim prahur apare pancha vimshatim सप्तैके नव षट् केचित् चत्वारि एकादशापरे केचित् सप्तदश प्राहु षोडशैके त्रयोदश एतावत्त्वं हि संख्यानां रसयो यद्विवक्षया गायन्ति पृथक् आयुष्मन् इदं नो वक्तुमर्हसि। Translation and purport by the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Uddhava inquired, my dear Lord, O Master of the Universe, how many different elements of creation have been enumerated by the great sages? I have heard you personally describe a total of 28. God, the Jiva soul, the Mahatattva, false ego, the five gross elements, the 10 senses, the mind, the 5 subtle objects of perception, and the 3 modes of nature. But some authorities say that there are 26 elements, while others cite 25, or else 7, 9, 6, 4, or 11. And even others say that there are 17, 16 or 13. What did each of these sages have in mind when he calculated the creative elements in such different ways? O Supreme Eternal, kindly explain this to me. Purport. Lord Krishna thoroughly explained in the previous chapter that Vedic knowledge is not meant for sense gratification, but for liberation from material bondage. Now Uddhava presents some intermediate questions that must be answered so that the path of liberation will be clear. Different philosophers have historically disagreed over the exact number of material elements, about the existence and non-existence of particular external objects, and about the existence of the soul itself. The Jnanakanda section of the Vedas aims at liberation through analytical understanding of the material world and of the spirit soul as a transcendental element beyond matter. Ultimately, the Supreme Lord Himself stands above all elements and maintains them by His personal potency. Uddhava mentions in numerical terms different methodologies of various sages, citing first the Lord's own opinion. The word Ayushman, or possessing eternal form, is significant in this regard. Since Lord Krishna is eternal, He possesses all knowledge of past, present and future and is thus the original and supreme philosopher. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, the different analytical approaches mentioned by Sri Uddhava are actually not contradictory, since they are different methods of categorizing the same reality. Atheistic speculation on reality does not recognize the existence of God. Consequently, it is a worthless attempt to explain the truth. The Lord Himself empowers different living entities to speculate and speak on reality in different ways. The actual reality, however, is the Lord Himself, who will now speak to Sri Uddhava. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Dvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishagan Mitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminidhi Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, there is this word called Asha in Sanskrit. So, what does this word Asha mean? It means desire, isn't it? But Asha also means hope. Asha means desire, but Asha also means hope. It's interesting because the two meanings are interconnected. Hope and desire are interconnected in the sense that desires flourish under the shelter of hope. Now, if you are speaking to somebody and that person says that I have a desire to learn swimming, that's understandable. But if you are speaking to somebody and the person says that I have a desire to learn flying, not with an aeroplane, but with your hands and legs. So you'll be confused whether to laugh or to cry. Because there is a hope for a human being to learn how to swim. So it becomes reasonable to have that desire to swim. But for human beings, there is no hope of learning to fly with your hands and legs. So if somebody has a desire to learn flying with their hands and legs, it's ridiculous. Because desires, they flourish only under the shelter of hope, right? Like, for example, myself, if I say that I have got a desire to become a world wrestling champion, it's ridiculous because there's no hope there. One more example is, you know, for those who are strictly following devotional principles, the desire to eat onion and garlic won't trouble us so much because there is no more hope of eating onion and garlic. So when there is no hope, the desire won't trouble you so much, isn't it? So, desires flourish under the shelter of hope. Now, the living entities in this material world have a very strong hope of finding happiness here. And because they've got a strong hope of finding happiness in this world, there are so many desires. But when the liberated pure devotees of the Lord hear of the desires of a living entity to enjoy within this world, it sounds ridiculous to them. Because actually there is no hope here. It's like somebody telling that I would learn to fly using my hands and legs. It's as ridiculous for a pure devotee of the Lord, when they hear about the desires, the petty desires of the conditioned soul to try to find happiness in this world. Nonetheless, the Vedas do provide a provision to try it out. Now, desires have always been there in living entities, even in earlier yugas. Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, etc. So, that living, that human beings have desires in Kali Yuga is not a new thing. And that's not actually the problem. Problem is not desires in Kali Yuga. The main problem in Kali Yuga is unrealistic hope. That is the problem, main problem in Kali Yuga, especially in the modern times. A person passes out of engineering college and he might have the temperament of a Brahmana. But then even he has hopes of becoming an entrepreneur like Steve Jobs, which needs a temperament of a Vaishya or a Kshatriya. Because in the modern times, people don't know what to hope for. It's like having a machine without a manual. You don't know what to expect from that machine. And people don't know what to hope for. You know, both individually and collectively both. At a collective level, people have unlimited hopes of making this material world a better place. And when there is hope, when there is unreasonable hope, when there is unrealistic hope, that leads to unrealistic desires. And unrealistic desires leads to misdirected intelligence. So as it is said that in the modern day world we have got, what is that called? Guided missiles, but misguided men. What we have made of this planet Earth, just because of the unrealistic hope of making this world a better place, a more comfortable place to live. Tremendous environmental pollution. Some time ago I was attending a seminar on water pollution, and the person was saying that the modern man has successfully tampered with the natural water cycle to such an extent that during the rainy seasons nowadays, the rain that comes is not uniform, if you observe, isn't it? The number of rainy days in Bombay has reduced, but the amount of rain is the same. That means what? Rains are concentrated only during certain times. It rains heavily one day, 2 days, and the entire Bombay comes to a standstill. And then there is a dry spell for a prolonged period of time. Again it rains heavily for 1 or 2 days. Again Bombay comes to a standstill. Again there is a dry spell for a considerable period of time. Again there is heavy rains. It's not uniformly divided. Rains are not uniformly divided. Now it's not a big problem in the cities per se. But if you are an agriculturist, it's a nightmare. Because for agriculture, you need uniform rainfall. And you see, many places in the Konkan areas and even in Maharashtra, all the agricultural production was wiped out because of non-uniform rains. What the future holds for humanity, nobody knows. Because of the unlimited hope of wanting to make this world a better place. That is the problem in Kali Yuga. You don't know what to hope for. So, the Vedas, they are not against fulfillment of desires. But the Vedas channelize your hope. They make it very clear what you can hope for with this human body. How much happiness you can hope for. How much pleasure you can hope for within this material world. How much happiness you can hope for within the heavenly planets. When the hope is made clear, then the hope is reasonable hope. The desires are reasonable desires, and the intelligence is properly directed. So the Karma Kanda sections of the Vedas, they cater to the needs of people who have hope with happiness within the material realm. and they give various formulas to satisfy desires for happiness within the material realm. And even though the Vedas give you formulas, but the understanding is no matter how well you follow the formulas, ultimately that hope is going to get frustrated. Because there is actually no hope of happiness within the material world. So when a person, after trying karmakanda for a prolonged period of time, when he finally comes to the level of frustration and realizes that actually there is no hope within the material realm for happiness, then the Vedas give the provision to make a transition from karmakanda to the level of jnanakanda. So the Vedas, first of all, they give you boundaries of hope, and secondly, they help you make a smooth transition from one level of hope to another. Now, coming back to the problems in the modern day world. In the modern day world, the precarious situation is, as I said, unrealistic hopes. And when your unrealistic hopes are frustrated, people don't know what to do because that's the dead end for them. And frustrated hope and unlimited desires. And you've got frustrated hope and unlimited desires, that's trauma. So trauma, stress, anxiety is a common problem in the modern material world, isn't it? Because unrealistic hopes, and you don't know when they're frustrated what next is to be done. And many times modern self-help gurus, what they do is they reinstate that hope because they don't have any other option. You feel you can't do it, you can still do it. It's just continuing the cycle over and over again. But the Vedas are so scientific. They give boundaries for your hope, and once your hope is frustrated, go to the next level. Once you have come to the understanding that it is useless to hope for happiness within the material realm, the Vedas give you the next step. Try for happiness through liberation. The section of the Vedas called the Jnanakanda. And the Jnanakanda begins with Nyaya. Nyaya means logic. So logically, you can figure out how there is actually no hope of happiness within the material world. And when you logically understand that there is no happiness within the material world, you feel happy about it. Isn't it? You feel, it's not that just I was frustrated. Everyone is going to get frustrated. So once you understand that everyone is going to get frustrated, it's not just me, you feel nice about it. So you come out of that level of frustration now. Then, after Nyaya, there is Vaisheshika. Vaisheshika means analysis of the material world from the atomic level. And through such analysis, you understand how the world is arranged in such a way that the atomic, you know, particles of the world are arranged in such a way as to create an illusion of happiness, but actually there is no happiness. And after Vaisheshika, there is Sankhya. Sankhya means analytical understanding. Prabhupada says Sankhya means trying to find the root of the tree, trying to find the origin of the creation with the aim of gaining liberation from this material world, with the hope of finding happiness through liberation. That is what Sankhya is all about. And in this particular verse which we are discussing today, Uddhava is inquiring about the various doctrines that are present in the field of Sankhya. Uddhava inquired, "My dear Lord, O Master of the universe, how many different elements of creation have been enumerated by the great sages? I have heard you personally describe a total of 28. God, the Jiva soul, the Mahatattva, false ego, the five gross elements, the 10 senses, the mind, the 5 subtle objects of perception, and the 3 modes of nature. But some authorities say that there are 26 elements, while others cite 25, or else 7, 9, 6, 4, or 11. And even others say that there are 17, 16, or 13. What did each of these sages have in mind when he calculated the creative elements in such different ways? O Supreme Eternal, kindly explain this to me. So as I said, hope leads to desires. And once you have desires, then the intelligence comes into play to satisfy those desires. So these sages, with the desire of liberation from material bondage, are using their intelligence to speculate in so many ways of how to categorize the elements of material creation. So even at the level of Jnanakanda, a person has lost hope in finding happiness in the material world. Now a person has hope to find happiness through liberation. But still, there is a hope to find that happiness independent of the intervention or independent of the shelter of the Supreme Lord. So many times, many of these philosophers, when they are counting the elements of material creation, they leave out God. Because there is still hope that we can find happiness without God. But then, after such speculation for many lifetimes, many times, finally a person comes to the understanding that there is no hope in finding happiness without surrendering to the Supreme Lord. And that's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva saromiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. A person comes to the understanding that the only way to find happiness, the only hope of finding happiness, is by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what is that surrender? Krishna explains in the 3rd chapter of the Gita. Mai sarvani karmani sanyasyadhyatma chetasa nirashir nirmamo bhutva yudhyasva vigata jvara. Mai sarvani karmani sanyasya. Give up all your works unto me. Adhyatma chetasa, with full consciousness of me. Nirashi. Nirashi means without any hopes in the material realm. Nirashi. Nirmamo bhutva. Without a sense of ownership. Yudhyasva vigatajvara. Fight without lethargy. This is what surrender to the Supreme Lord means. And one of the things that Krishna states is nirashi. Give up hope of finding happiness independent of me. And in the next verse, what does Krishna say? Yeme matam idam nityam anutishtanti manava shraddhavanto nasuyanto muchyante tepi karmabihi. And in this particular verse, Krishna says shraddhavanto. So Krishna is recommending that you give up hope. Give up material hope and turn to faith. Become nirashi and become shraddhavan. Make a transition from the stage of material hope, asha, to shraddha, that is faith. Now, hope is also belief. Isn't it? When you hope for something, you believe that something good is going to happen. Things are going to be positive. And even faith is a belief. where there's a lot of difference between these two kinds of beliefs. The belief of Asha and the belief of Shraddha. And the whole process of Bhakti Yoga is to make this transition from Asha to Shraddha. Now what's the difference between Asha and Shraddha? Let's take an example. Now you are sitting in a train. It's moderately crowded. And a Mataji enters the train holding a baby in her arms. And when she enters, she has hope that somebody will get up and give her seat. She may not express it on her face, but she has that hope that Asha is there. So there is, when there is just hope, hope is always accompanied by anxiety. What if the hope is not fulfilled? What if my hope turns to hopelessness? So hope is always accompanied by stress and anxiety. There cannot be peace with hope. Along with Asha, there cannot be shanti. Ashanti rahegi. But if you see the child in her arms, that child is having Shraddha, trust in his mother. So because the child has, you know, Shraddha, trust, the child is peaceful, oblivious to all the crowd in the train, because the child has simply taken shelter. So the child is peaceful, but the mother has no peace whatsoever. So one difference between Asha and Shraddha is, in Asha, there is no peace. But in Shraddha, there is peace. A person is hopeful. A person as Asha might exhibit character. But that character doesn't have depth. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana Sarver gunaistatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna mano rathena sati dhavato bahi. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that someone who is not a devotee of the Lord is still on the mental platform. Manoratha. Manoratha means such a person is still riding on the chariot of the mind. And the chariot of the mind means desires and hopes. Isn't it? So, such a person's character is not reliable. So this mummy who has entered the local train, she's externally peaceful for a while holding the baby, but she sees after 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, nobody is getting up. So externally she might still be peaceful, but internally, gali suna rahe sabko. These people don't have this much sense also. Why are they not getting up? And there are chances that she might even be verbal. So the character, that good character is shallow. But the baby is peaceful. Peacefully sleeping. Isn't it? So this is the second difference between Asha and Shraddha. When we are on the platform of Asha, there is character. You might exhibit character, but that character may not be long-lasting. It may not have depth. But when there is Shraddha in God, then that character is deep and it has substance. Actually, in the modern day world, the self-help and motivation that you find, it's all about at the level of hope. And people speak about character, but the character that is spoken without God It is based upon hope or asha, and so it is shallow. Character can be deeply rooted only when there is shraddha, dependence upon the Supreme Lord. So this is the second difference. The third difference between asha and shraddha is hope is dependent upon logic and visualization. Isn't it? When a person is hopeful, such a person is very logical in making an estimation of why I am hopeful. So you are depending upon logic and you are visualizing where, how far you are going to move ahead. So hope is very much dependent upon logic and visualization. But shraddha, faith, takes you beyond the limitations of logic and visualization. Again, this example of the mother and the child. So the mother, she has logic that people are considerate. So when I get into the train, they are going to get up and provide me seat. So her hope is based on logic. And there is visualization also, in the sense that when she gets into the train, she looks at people and she visualizes, this person looks like good chance that he will get up. He looks mild-mannered. But this guy looks little kharoos. This fellow may not get up. It based upon logic and visualization. But the child is fast asleep. Where is the question of visualization? No visualization at all. And the child passes through the journey smoothly without even realizing what he or she went through. Beyond logic and visualization. So this is the third difference. Asha is very much dependent upon logic and visualization. And material logic and visualization has limitations. But shraddha or faith or trust in the Supreme Lord takes you beyond the limitations of logic and realization. Now, a classical example from the scriptures of a person on the platform of asha and a platform of shraddha are Shukracharya and Bali Maharaj respectively. Shukracharya was on the platform of asha. He still had hopes in finding happiness within the material realm. But Bali Maharaj was on the level of shraddha, complete faith and trust, independence upon the Supreme Lord. And today, being Vamana Dwadashi, it's very logical to discuss this to some extent. Now, it's very interesting that when Vamana Dev, he came to the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj, begging for 3 steps of land. Initially, Bali Maharaj, he was surprised that you are asking for just 3 steps of land, ask for more. And then there was a discussion between Vamandev and Bali Maharaj. And Vamandev said that, I am really sure, I just want 3 steps of land. And then Bali Maharaj is about to give charity of 3 steps of land to Vamanandev. And as soon as Bali is ready to make this charity, immediately Shukracharya intervenes. Now Shukracharya is extremely intelligent. Now, you know, people are intelligent at all levels, at the level of karma kanda, jnana kanda, at the level of bhakti also. But when you are at the level of karma kanda, your intelligence is utilized in fulfilling your material desires.
At the level of Jnanakanda, your intelligence is utilized to figure out how to get out of the material existence. But it's very interesting that the Vedas don't call people on the level of Karmakanda Jnanis, even though they might be intelligent. But only people who are on the level of, who are trying for liberation from this material world, when they exhibit their intelligence, they are called Jnanis by the Vedic scriptures. But the Jnanis, or the intelligent people at the level of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda, are very much different from the intelligent people who are at the level of Bhakti Yoga. What is the difference? Krishna says in the Gita, Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana bahu shakahi anantascha buddhayo avyavasayanam. So somebody who is on the level of Karmakanda or Jnanakanda, such a person's intelligence is many branched. Because such a person as many desires, so many branches of intelligence. But once a person comes to the level of bhakti, a person is no longer interested in fulfilling materialistic desires. So such a person's intelligence is one-pointed in simply serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here also, the many-branched intelligence of Shukracharya is very astute. Even Krishna acknowledges this in Bhagavad Gita. Kavinam Ushana Kavihi, he says. Amongst thoughtful people, I am Shukracharya. Krishna says, extremely intelligent. And the Prabhupada says that Shukracharya was an extremely intelligent and far-seeing politician. And Shukracharya is exhibiting his intelligence here in stopping Bali. And he's telling, Vamanadeva will first occupy the three worlds with one step, then he will take his second step and occupy everything in outer space. And then he will expand his universal body to occupy everything. Where will you offer him the third step? And then he says, you will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise. And I think that because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. He almost exactly predicted what is going to happen. Exactly. First step, he'll occupy the three worlds. With the second step, he'll occupy everything in outer space. And then he'll expand his universal body to occupy everything. Exactly, he foretold the future. He's a far-seeing politician. And you'll certainly be unable to fulfill your promise. And I think that because of this inability, you'll eternally your eternal residence will be in hell. Absolutely right. What perfect visualization, isn't it? And what perfect logic of Shukracharya. But it's all based on asha, hope for material enjoyment. And so there are limitations. And obviously Shukracharya lost his peace. In spite of his warning, Bali Maharaj went ahead and gave in charity to Vamanadeva. And when Shukracharya saw this, he lost his character. He was the guru of Bali, supposed to be the well-wisher of his disciple. But he flipped out and cursed his own disciple. Loss of character. Lost his peace, lost his character, and very much brilliant visualization, brilliant logic, but within limitations. As against this, what is Bali Maharaj's reaction, response to whatever happened? Indeed, Vamanadeva occupied the three worlds, outer space, and then because Bali Maharaj was unable to fulfill his promise for the third step, Bali Maharaj was arrested. extreme situation of hopelessness from an external perspective. But internally, Bali Maharaj was strongly situated on the platform of Shraddha, firm faith and trust in the affection, in the love, in the protection of the Supreme Lord. Very famous verses. Pumsam shlaghayatam manye dandam arhatam arpitam yam namata pita bhrata suradas chadi shantihi. Although a father, mother, brother or friend may sometimes punish one as a well-wisher, they never punish their subordinate like this. But because you are the most worshipable Lord, I regard the punishment you have given me as most exalted. And Srila Prabhupada in his purport, he says that punishment meted out by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is accepted by the devotee as the greatest mercy. Because the devotee has firm trust in Krishna. Whatever you are doing, it's for my own welfare. It's like when I was a child, and during those days, when we were kids, it was common for parents to punish their children. Nowadays, if parents punish children, there is a danger of they'll be put behind bars. Isn't it? So my mother, sometimes if I did something wrong, she used to beat me up, right? So with a stick, and she used to always beat behind the waist level on the legs, where there are no marks. Joking. So when she is beating, so naturally I should be calling someone else's name for help, right? But the natural response would be, mummy, mummy, mummy. Mummy herself is beating, but what you are calling is mummy, mummy, mummy. Because the trust is so strong in your mother, that even when your mother is only beating you, you can only call out your mother's name only. Naturally, that's a natural response. That's how a devotee is. A devotee has such strong trust in the Supreme Lord that when the Supreme Lord punishes, the only thing that comes from the mouth of the devotee is, Krishna, please help me. He is only punishing, but you still say, Krishna, you help me. That's what Bali Maharaj is also telling here. That here Bali Maharaj is telling that even mother, father won't punish so heavily. But because you are the most worshipable Lord, I regard the punishment you have given me as most exalted. And Prabhupada says here, a devotee knows that so-called punishment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is only his favor to correct his devotee and bring him to the right path. And then Bali Maharaj continues, since your lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, you act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige. By chastising us, you give us the eyes by which to see the right path. This is the power of trust. Even in the most hopeless situations, you see an understanding of why something is happening to you. You see the divine hands of the Lord, the divine mercy of the Supreme Lord behind that. And then Bali Maharaj says, many demons who are continuously inimical towards you finally achieved the perfection of great mystic yogis. Your lordship can perform one work to serve many purposes. And consequently, although you have punished me in so many ways, I do not feel ashamed of having been arrested by the ropes of Varuna, nor do I feel aggrieved. So, Bali Maharaj is expressing his Shraddha in these verses. And in one particular verse he expresses his Nirasha. Right? No hope in the material world, but complete trust and faith in you, my dear Lord. He says, what is the use of the material body, which automatically leaves its owner at the end of life? And what is the use of all one's family members who are actually plunderers, taking away money that is useful for the service of the Lord in spiritual opulence? What is the use of a wife? She is only the source of increasing material conditions. And what is the use of family, home, country and community? Attachment for them merely wastes the valuable energy of one's lifetime. So Bali Maharaj, he had lost hope in finding any happiness independent of the Supreme Lord. And he had gained complete trust in a life of dependence upon the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he had such complete Shraddha, he was peaceful despite all reversals. He never lost his character. He remained surrendered through all the challenges that he had to go through. And thirdly, he was able to cross beyond all mundane logic and visualization. Even materially speaking, he was awarded Sutala planet. And Krishna made the Sutala planet more opulent than even the heavenly planets. We can see the flaw in Shukracharya's, you know, logic and visualization. He got everything right. But then there was a limitation to it. He couldn't imagine that the Supreme Lord can defy all your logic and visualization, which is on the material platform, and award his devotee anything that he wants. Shukracharya couldn't imagine that Bali Maharaj could be off. He was right in the sense that Bali Maharaj was sent to hell. But he couldn't imagine that even the hellish planet could be made more opulent than the heavenly planets. That was beyond his comprehension. And Bali Maharaj, because he relied on Shraddha rather than Asha, he was easily able to pass through all those tests and trials and was able to achieve a destination which was beyond anyone's wildest visualizations or logic, both materially and spiritually. So that is what Bhakti Yoga is all about. Going beyond Asha to the level of Shraddha. So these are some thoughts which I had in mind regarding today's verse. Thank you very much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki.